This is James Corbett, and you're tuned into CorbettReport.com. It is the 21st day of October 2011 here in Japan, and today I'm joined on the line from Canada by Eric Dion, the curator of a collection called The Film Archive at youtube.com/thefilmarchive and also thefilmarchive.org. An incredible collection of clips and video footage for throughout several decades, really. Just an amazing repository of information. So, Eric Dion, it's great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, well, I think I indicated sort of what the general nature of the Film Archive is there, but perhaps you can go into some more detail for us. Precisely what is the Film Archive, and how did it start to come together?
Well, I started a few years back, around, I think it was 2008, I started just posting YouTube videos, and there wasn't any one purpose to it. It was just to post archival clips and just things that I was interested in. But since then, it's kind of steered in a few directions. One is the political direction, which involves a lot of the films that you've mentioned in the past, the CIA, FBI, things of that nature. And I also cover a bit of the cultural side, and it's really just documenting the history of the United States through various archival clips and a lot of footage. So it's really just a resource to point in the direction of, you know, whatever people are interested in. I try to incorporate a lot of audience feedback in terms of what I post, you know, if they like certain clips or dislike other clips. But it's fairly broad-based in scope, but obviously a lot of it's geared towards my interests. So there's a lot of political material there and a lot of clips from the 50s to the 70s and a few recent clips as well.
That's right. Well, as you indicate, I mean, it's just such a diverse range of material. And of course, there is certainly the political FBI and CIA archival type footage. But also, I mean, there's all sorts of things in here, including old films and cartoons and all sorts of things. So it is quite an eclectic collection. So I guess that raises the question of how you collect these clips. Where do you get them from and how do you post them?
Well, there's a variety of sources that are available. Here in Canada, we have a great collection in Ottawa called Library and Archives Canada, and they have pretty much almost the entire recorded history of all of Canadian film and TV and so on. So that was a big starting point, certainly for getting me interested in just collecting footage. And in terms of the United States, there are a lot of great resources. In one instance, learning about the CIA film library, I found a site called thememoryhole.org. I don't think it exists anymore, but on that site, they had a listing from a Freedom of Information Act request where they went through all these different films that the CIA had, and they had instructions of how to request them and so on. So they had things like Animal Farm and different clips that the CIA had. So just requesting those, there's lots of films in the National Archives. In terms of some of the clips that I've seen on your program, there was a great show in Texas back in the 70s, and then it lasted up until the mid-90s called Alternative Views. And they posted a lot of great clips as well. And they had a fairly large focus on foreign policy, CIA, FBI, religious matters as well. So the sources are varied, but there's also a lot of great clips to be found on archive.org. So, you know, pretty much anywhere I can find them, I'll post them.
And you have so many clips, and they continue to come out on pretty much a daily basis from what I can see. I mean, this must be, if not a full-time endeavor, at least must take a large amount of your time.
Yeah, I mean, and what happens is that I'm only able to devote time to certain activities. So a lot of the descriptions for the videos are taken from sources like Wikipedia, which is just easy to get descriptions where I don't have to write them all myself. But in terms of posting the clips, it's pretty much on a continual basis. There are a few channels now that kind of spread out the content in terms of, you know, TV is more on one channel and political stuff is more on other channels. But the nice thing is that YouTube allows you to just continually post. And some people have commented saying, you know, what are you doing, you know, home at this time, posting these kind of videos and so on. But most of the time it's happening automatically. I don't actually have to be there for the videos to be posted. But it's definitely taking up a lot of my time currently. But it's fun. It's mostly a hobby at this point. But as long as people continue to enjoy it, I'll continue doing it.
Well, I have no doubt that many people are enjoying it. And in fact, I would venture to guess that probably the majority of my listeners have encountered some of your clips in their own research, whether they realize it's from the Film Archive or not. And certainly I have, over the course of my research over the last few years, certainly definitely seen the Film Archive pop up time and again, which is why I wanted to get you on today, because I've come to realize just how valuable a collection this is. So definitely my hat's off to you for all this work. But I guess to get more in-depth about the archive itself, perhaps you can tell us how big is the archive? What are some of the most popular clips? And how many views do you have on YouTube? That sort of information.
Sure. I haven't really looked at the total number. I think there are over 2,000 videos on the main channel, and I think there are almost another 1,000 on some of the sub channels, and they're all linked off of the main channel. But some of the more popular videos, some of them have to do with the CIA. One of my favorites is a documentary on the MK Ultra program from the 1970s, and it's just a really good piece of investigative journalism that kind of makes you wish that that kind of reporting still existed, because obviously, a lot of work went into it, and it wasn't just, you know, patched together with a few sound bites and so on. Like, they actually did the research. Some of the other clips, a lot of people are interested in drugs, LSD tests and so on. CIA did in the 1950s. Those get a lot of upvotes. I think a lot of the Vietnam War clips as well. Are definitely popular, and I find it's just a lot of it has to do with what people remember. You know, if they're searching for a certain type of clip, it's usually something they might have seen before or something similar. So they'll end up looking a lot for that. So a lot of people, you know, saying that, you know, I remember seeing this, you know, 30, 40 years ago, and they're really just looking to see it again. And then there are those who are, you know, doing research on a given topic, and they use it for either school or shows like yours. So it's really there for that. And there are a lot of C-SPAN clips as well, as you mentioned. And that's been a great resource. And that's really when I started to get a lot more visitors. I think now it's up to a few million hits on the videos. I haven't done a full tally, but I think it's listed on the main page. And that's really when a lot of people started to subscribe, was posting a lot of interviews with political commentators, old CIA officers like John Stockwell and some others, Phil Agee. And really I just started to follow that, you know, following the audience and seeing what they liked. I posted a lot of Iran-Contra testimony of Ronald Reagan from Iran-Contra as well, which most people haven't seen. I just try to, you know, follow what people are interested in, but it's not always clear, but they end up doing a lot of the watching for me, because obviously I don't have time to watch every minute of every clip, so often viewers will point out either interesting things in clips or things that are wrong or missing or need to be fixed, In that sense, it's a collaborative effort, in the sense that they, you know, really helped me out in terms of doing a lot of the fixes that need to happen on the videos.
That's right. Well, that's why I thought originally this either must be a group effort of some sort, maybe a group of people who are doing this, or it must be some sort of collaborative effort in the sense that you said, because certainly there's just so much footage that I imagine one person could not possibly watch all of this unless they were doing it full time. Yeah. Absolutely. Just an incredible collection, and no need for modesty. You have, I'm looking at youtube.com/thefilmarchive right now. It's 9.8 million upload views so far, which is a clear couple million more than the Corbett Report has now. So absolutely, definitely a lot of people are checking this out and finding value in these clips, and certainly some of them have hundreds of thousands of views. So just an incredible collection. And you noted that a lot of people say that, or you noted yourself that that there's some of the investigative reports from the 70s and things are just really well done. And I've been noting that as well, going through some of the older clips in the archive and looking, for example, at a cartoon about how the New York Stock Exchange works, or looking at an old A is for Adam cartoon for kids about how nuclear energy works, and noting a lot of the comments from some of the users saying that children's cartoons in the 1950s were more explicit and more detailed and offered more actual knowledge than a lot of supposed investigative journalism does these days. Can you speak to that, the value of some of these older clips in that regard?
Yeah, I found that surprising as well. I noticed a lot of those comments coming in saying that, that they find a lot of these archival clips that were really meant for, I think, a younger audience, that, like you said, even some of the cartoons, that that they really address a lot of issues and subjects in a more detailed and explicit manner than you'd get today, and sometimes in more honesty, in a more honest way as well, because I don't know, there was just a different time, and when they were putting together these productions, I guess they spent a lot more time, because it wasn't just something that would be cobbled together in just a few hours, and just from the clips I watch of the news today, I mean, there's really no opportunity for any kind of depth. Everything has to be really concise, unless you can make your point in 10 or 30 seconds, there's really no point. And, everything just has to be really quick and rapid fire, and then repeated 50 times throughout the day. So it's not really surprising that people find a lot of the archival clips more interesting, because really there's not much of an opportunity on TV now to watch anything that isn't just, pure entertainment, or even if it does have an interesting topic or a political one, most of the time the subject just gets very brief overviews. I mean, you're lucky to get a minute of something really valuable. So I think, it's sometimes people might seem to be, yearning for a different decade, but in some ways, obviously, politically, it wasn't as great to live through, but certainly a lot of the information is very useful. And in some cases, I try to present it all in an uncensored way. So even if it's something I don't agree with at all, or if it's just propaganda or anything like that, I think even those clips have some kind of value to show that what a certain kind of group was trying to present at a certain time. I mean, there's one that's getting a lot of attention now on Germany. 1945, and it was just after the war, and it was a U.S. government clip, basically, describing like how this could happen, and saying all these terrible things about Germany, but making a clear distinction between American Germans and Germans living in Germany, and lots of people obviously take offense to that clip, but I think it's more to be seen in the context of the time and why it was made, and what point they were trying to get across and what they were trying to convince people of. That's really an important thing, and it's not meant to be a political statement on today.
Well, absolutely. I think there is value to some of those old propaganda films, because they allow us the space to reflect on the propaganda in our own time, because certainly it does exist, even if it exists in a different form. And it's easy to look back and to laugh at some of the sort of almost cartoonish type propaganda that used to exist. But to think that we're really living in a fundamentally different era is probably a folly on our part. And I'm sure future generations will look back at the propaganda put out in our generation and laugh just the same. So it does give us pause to reflect on that. And also, as you say, I think some of the older clips that demonstrate I think a vast disparity in the level of discourse that was going on a few decades ago as compared to what's popularly shown on TV today. And it does, I think, reflect on the fact that there has been a massive dumbing down of our society in whatever way that's taken place or for whatever reasons. But certainly I think it's valuable, even if only in that regard. Perhaps you can tell us about some of your favorite clips in the collection and why they've why they strike you as particularly interesting.
Oh, well, think about it. As I said, certainly some of the documentaries. Actually, one of the clips I find quite interesting is actually one of the most popular on one of the other channels, which is an LSD experiment from, I think it was from California, and basically the stated point of the experiment was to induce a state of schizophrenia in a patient using LSD. And this was back in the era when no one really knew what the drug did. And so there were lots of experiments funded by the CIA that were trying to find out, you know, what it could be used for, if it could be used in interrogation, if it could be used to get information from the subject. And so there were all these different experiments conducted in lots of educational institutions, actually, and across the United States and in Canada as well, in Montreal particularly. And this clip really just shows the entire research portion. And what's interesting is that, you know, they're really trying to guide the subject towards the results they want. Whereas the entire time, you know, the test subject just becomes more and more basically in love with the drug. I mean, he's loving the experience and, you know, he's feeling all these great feelings, and the scientist at one point just claps his hands and basically is trying to get him to snap out of these feelings and, you know, continue with his research, and they get him to draw some pictures and to look at the effects of the drug on him. But it's just a interesting clip because it's fascinating to see, you know, what a lot of these agencies did before the effects were really well known. I mean, in that case, the subject was willing and an active participant. And in many cases, you know, the CIA would just go out into the street or into bars and just you know, those people, because they felt that it wouldn't have a true effect unless they were doing it in an operational field. I mean, they didn't think that just doing it in a lab was enough. They needed to see if they could actually use it in an operational setting. So they just went in with no permissions or anything, set up safe houses, and just did their tests. So there were lots of people who unwittingly would get dosed with different chemicals without ever knowing about it, and then some lawsuits, you know, on that surface decades later when some of the information got out. And that obviously ties into the documentary I mentioned earlier, which is in, I think, several parts. I think it's posted a few times on the film archive, and it basically runs through that entire history. As for some of the other clips, I'm trying to think. There's so many. I mean, I really do like a lot of the John Stockwell interviews. He was a CIA officer back in the 60s and 70s, and he left the agency and basically went on this truth-telling mission. He released some books and revealed a lot about what he did and what he thought was currently going on in CIA. And and the government took him to court and took his book profits, and but he just continued to do interviews, and at one point he wasn't allowed to bring any speaking notes with him. He could only just basically talk, you know, on top of mind, because everything that he wrote down had to be reviewed by the agency for approval. So so he's a great resource in terms of understanding what they're about, and he led one of their operations in Angola, and there are lots of great revelation in his interviews, and it's really just the honesty that I think speaks to a lot of people, because I'm sure not everyone who watches his clips necessarily agrees with him politically, but they can see that, you know, he's trying to be as honest as possible about his activities and how he felt that, you know, a lot of the operations were really not in the national interest for the United States.
That's right, and viewers of my recent CIA in the Media video clip will probably recognize John Stockwell from that. He was one of the sources that I used, and certainly the Film Archive, again, was very, very handy in the research that I was doing for that video. Do you happen to know if John Stockwell is still around? I mean, a lot of the clips are from the 70s or 80s, but I haven't seen anything of him recently.
Yeah, and that's a question that's come up a few times, actually. A lot of people want to know, given how actively he was involved in that time, what actually happened to him afterwards. As far as I can gather, he simply, you know, retired, I guess, in a sense. I mean, he was earning most of his income from speaking engagements because he couldn't really do much else. He left the government and was pretty much unable to make money, at least much money from his books. But the last appearance that I saw from him, he did some later TV appearances, and the last one I saw was on the documentary shot for A&E on the Phoenix program in Vietnam. And in those clips, he looked slightly older, so I assume that was the last time that he at least participated in the movie that I've seen. And I do recall a few years later, there was someone trying to delete his Wikipedia page, claiming to be his son, and saying something to the effect of, you know, he used to do this, but he just, you know, wants to be left alone now and just wants to retire and then not be bothered with this. So that's pretty much all I know. Lots of people interested. That's the thing about posting archival clips is everyone wants to know, you know, where these people are right now. But as far as I know, he's not participating in any more interviews or working on anything else.
Very interesting. Well, I guess it's incumbent on me, since I do a lot of this research, maybe I'll try to find out myself and see if he is interested in talking anymore. Well, very interesting. And
yeah, that would be, I would definitely be interested in hearing that, because he's definitely one of my
I will certainly let you know if that ever transpires. But I, as you say, I'm sure you do get a lot of feedback and a lot of emails and questions about your work. Of course, again, people can find it at thefilmarchive.org or youtube.com/thefilmarchive. But it of course raises a question. I mean, you put so much time and effort into this. How do people support you in this effort?
How do they support? As you know, all the clips are free on the site. There's some ads on some of the videos, but that's pretty much it. I mean, there are some DVDs as well available on the website that have some of the government clips and things like that. If sometimes filmmakers want to buy, you know, certain videos and things like that, so that makes it easy for them. But yeah, in general, it's just that. I mean, it's not. I don't actively solicit donations or anything like that, because I think if people are interested, then we'll continue visiting and so on. So there's no real need. And as I said, it's mainly a hobby at this point. So it's just, you know, something I like to do in my spare time. But yeah, I mean it. It's obviously a big interest of mine in terms of, you know, collecting footage and things like that. Something that I've always been interested in. But Yeah, so
excellent. Well, it might be a hobby for you, but it's certainly a valuable resource for a lot of people, including myself, and I'm sure many of my listeners. So I'd like to thank you for taking the time to do this, and I hope other people will express their thanks for it as well. Certainly just a plethora of information available at thefilmarchive.org, so I certainly hope that listeners who haven't yet done so will check it out. But Eric Dion, I'd like to thank you so much for your time, not only in this conversation, but all the time you've taken curating this incredible collection.
Thank you very much.